Hi, this is Amy, and in this episode, AADL talks to author Ruta Zepedes. We were lucky enough to have Ann Arbor Ypsilanti Reads author Ruta Zepedes sit down with us for a brief chat about her book, Between Shades of Gray, prior to her presentation at Washtenaw Community College. So the first question I wanted to ask you was that I found that even though it was something very upsetting and the content was difficult and harrowing, it was so readable. And I wondered if you had set out to write that way or if it just came pouring out, because I know that your background, your story about your father and the people you talked to really propelled you to write this book. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. It was definitely a conscious effort to write in a way that would make the text easy to read, because it was a difficult subject, obscure, you know, period in history. And I wanted younger people to be able to read the book, and I wanted it to have a sense of immediacy. So I decided on short chapters and short sentences that would not give the reader a place to say, you know what, I'll take a break right now. How many pages do I have left in this chapter? Because every chapter was only two or three pages. So no, that was definitely a conscious effort, but also a little bit on my part, because I'm an impatient reader, and so I'm an impatient writer. I try to get the point across in you know, as few words as possible.
Well, to me, it had not only sort of a relentless pace, but it was full of extremes. There was, you know, the extreme weather, the harrowing conditions that kept getting worse and worse. And it felt really relentless, very suspenseful. And I thought, wow, you know, that must have been directed to some degree about how unsettling the experience was of the people that you spoke with and who you based the story on.
Yeah, it was. And I'm so grateful and thrilled that you felt this relentless pace, because when I first wrote the book, it was just nonstop, relentless. And then my agent suggested that we insert flashbacks to give the reader a second to breathe, and also to give the reader an idea and an overview of what life was like before these people lost everything, before, you know, this relentless, you know, terror began. But initially, the book did not have the flashbacks, and I'm grateful for that suggestion by my agent.
I think that I read somewhere where it had maybe been a little bit more bleak, and you were asked to lighten it up a little, or what was it? Did it have a different ending? Did more people die? What was it like?
All of the above. All of the above. In the very first draft that I had sent to my agent, I killed everyone. Everyone died except the main character. And my agent said, no, you can't do this. You can't ask people to stay with you for 275 pages and then they all die the end. And she said, you told me about so many people that you interviewed that had expressed, you know, that they had experienced hope and transformation. And she said, where is that? I'm not seeing that. All I'm seeing is the death and destruction. And she was right. And so I really enjoy dark and sad stories. And to me, if no one is left standing at the end, that's okay. But I've learned through this process that I'm definitely in the minority, and that the majority of readers, they want some strand of hope. And I'm glad that I took those suggestions. I really believe that writing is a team sport. People say I'm crazy, but for me it is. I have a writing group that I work with. I work with my agent. I work with my editor. And the things that they tell me and the feedback they give me, I take that very seriously. And so when they read the first draft and said it's way too dark, I revised.
Well, I want to let you know, I like to read a lot about that period of time, and the bleaker the better for me too. So it would I'm a kindred spirit in
yes.
that way, which is a strange thing to say. But no, I appreciated and this brings up another issue that I felt was really strongly explored in the work, is that, you know, sometimes that glimmer of hope was really, really small, but it was mm-hmm. there. Sometimes it was just a look that one character gave the other. Sometimes it was, you know, the intervention of an officer helping somebody, you know, something more straightforward, but that, you know, you were hanging on for that next spark of humanity to save you from this bleakness. And I think you delivered it in several different ways. And it sounds like you had made an effort to bring that into the story.
Thank you. I did. And the survivors had each individually given me examples of hope in the face of horror. One told me that, you know, she picked up a stone and inside there were a few sparkles. And to her, that day, it was enough, you know, to encourage her to fight for life because she saw beauty in captivity, that there were these sparkles inside this stone. And so she said, I looked around and I saw these people and we were all innocent and we had done nothing. And it was beauty in captivity. And, you know, the stone survived. And so we would survive. And so I wanted to put those elements in the book because they reflected the experience of the people, you know, who survived.
And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the power of art as communication, as individuality. I kept waiting for Lena's art to give her away or to get her into trouble. But I was also so happy that she was able to hang on to who she was through that. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about introducing her as an artist.
That was something I decided pretty early on, that I wanted to give the character some sort of a talent that when she was deported and imprisoned, she had lost more than just her home life, or that she had lost this talent, which was potentially her future. And I chose art because that was very, I guess, an accurate depiction of voice in the Baltics. When Lithuania was Soviet occupied, they could no longer fly their flag. They could no longer speak their language. I mean, the Soviets took the name of their country off the map. So they had to learn how to speak, even though their voice had been extinguished. And they used art and music. And they were communicating and expressing themselves. And the Soviets had no idea that they were doing it. They were exchanging information, important information through art and music. And so I wanted to incorporate that into the book. And when I was researching, I was in Lithuania and in the Museum of Genocide, I had the opportunity to see some of these pieces of art. And they were so incredibly moving. The hope and love that people were experiencing and how they were expressing it and how they were sharing it. And then I chose the Scandinavian painter Edvard Munch to represent the main characters, that this was one of her heroes. And he wrote on themes of love and suffering and death and captivity, which sort of mirrored her own experience.
When you were writing, there are many, again, also examples of the individual act which threatens the group, or just group versus individual, a lot of that tension in the text. And I wondered, did you get some of that from the stories that you heard, and were you looking to try to create that in terms of, you know, the Soviet experience in particular, with the whole notion of that dichotomy?
Yes. I wanted to represent that dynamic, but that dynamic also created terror. It was one of the Soviet methods of terror, was never allowing someone to know what to expect. And when you wake up in the morning, if you have no idea of what's going to happen that day, what could possibly happen, what could possibly be asked of you, it's a form of terror. You're constantly frightened. And what they did was they would put people in these group situations and pit them against one another. So all of a sudden, people who were best friends were sort of pitted against each other. One had signed a paper and one hadn't. Well, your friend signed the paper. Well, what is the paper for? We can't tell you. Well, how can I sign something when I don't know what it is? You know, if I sign, do I get to eat tonight? Or if I sign, am I, you know, sentencing myself to another 25 years in a gulag? And that dynamic, to navigate that amidst this terror with friends and in groups, was so difficult. And many people that I met with, although they didn't have many regrets, that would probably be, the main regret is that there was a complexity in the group dynamic that caused a falling out with a friend that never should have happened. And so I wanted to reflect that. And I'm so grateful that you brought it up. Thank you.
One of my favorite characters was the mother. And I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about what you drew on to create her character.
To create the mother character, I thought a lot about gender roles in the Baltics during this time period. When Stalin wanted to occupy the Baltics, you know, he immediately created these lists of those he considered anti-Soviet. On the list, all of the intelligentsia. Lithuania lost their best men, you know, their best and brightest men during this genocide. And the country, you know, is still recovering from that. And women play such a role of strength in Lithuania. The president of Lithuania is a woman. The minister of defense is a woman. The minister of finance is a woman. These women are just really a strong force. But generally, when you think of sheer strength, you don't necessarily immediately think of sheer warmth and a maternal, loving kind of spirit. But that's really the women of Lithuania. They're incredible. They are not only strong and powerful, but they're warm and loving. First and foremost, they're mothers. And so I created this mother character to represent the higher spirit of Lithuania, which is this woman. And of course, woven elements of my older sister and my mom. You know, you can't help but, you know, but do that. So much so that when my brother was reading the book, he called me. He's like, "Oh my gosh, the mother, she's mom." And he's like, "You're not going to kill mom, are you?" I said, "Oh, you have to read the book and see."
One of the things that I was really struck by, and I imagine that you've heard this before, you've talked about it, is, you know, we're so familiar with stories of the Nazi atrocities and the Holocaust. We're very, very familiar with the Diary of Anne Frank. And what I was really struck by was how were the similarities and the, you know, stark differences between your book and that book, in that it's almost as though when they pulled Anne Frank out, you know, her story is, you know, her diaries and that's it. It's almost as though Lena's journey is kind of paralleling what happened to Anne after she was taken out, from the deportation to the harrowing journey and, you know, the eventual suffering that she and her family went through. And I just wondered if you were consciously, you know, that their ages are the same, they're coming of age, they're exploring their feelings with the opposite sex and all of that is actually, there are a lot of parallels there. And I wondered if you were thinking of that when you wrote it or if that just...
No, I honestly didn't think of that when I wrote it first, because I put, you know, the Diary of Anne Frank on such a pedestal. My book is fiction. You know, the Diary of Anne Frank is, you know, is nonfiction. And the Diary of Anne Frank is a gift that we have had. It was first published in Europe since the 40s. So we have known about this piece of history for a long time. The common denominator, I would say, between the two, and again, I could never compare my book to the Diary of Anne Frank because, like I said, it's, you know, such a treasure to me, but is that we've got these two teenage girls. And what I learned when I interviewed the people who had been in exile was I foolishly thought that when you experience something so traumatic and you have everything taken away from you, somehow that your teenage years are peeled away, you know, like a skin, and you don't experience them. But that wasn't the case. I thought that these people would immediately grow up, but no, emotionally, they were still teenagers, and their sensibility, their ability to hope and to summon courage within themselves and to love for the first time, and all of the experiences involved with falling in love for the first time was still very much a teenage perspective. And so I think, you know, through the Diary of Anne Frank, we have that looking glass of a teenager, and through Between Shades of Grey, through Lena, we have that, you know, the same sort of perspective. Different, you know, they're looking at different things and the history is different, but I think the teenage spirit and sensibility of innocence, beautiful innocence, is still there.
And I think to tag on to that, I think when you read the Diary of Anne Frank, you can't help but close the book and imagine what happened to her right afterward. And your book starts right there with the breaking in, the coming into the apartment and pulling the family out, and the quick decisions that are made, and the horror of that. And it's it just really struck me that that was, you know, an interesting juxtaposition, I guess, with
yes,
that.
Yes, and I wish, you know, to that point, I really hope that someone will write a book about the Holocaust in Lithuania, because that's another very untold story. You know, the Germany pushed the Soviets out of Lithuania shortly after my story takes place. And unfortunately, I mean, there was, they killed hundreds of thousands of Jews in Lithuania. And sadly, some Lithuanians were collaborators. And it's a really complex part of history. And there is definitely a book there. And I'm really hoping that someone will write, you know, will write that story, because it's also, it's an important story and it's an untold story for that part of the world.
And you, this story, is this one of the only or the only books for young adults on this particular topic that you're aware of, or how?
Years ago, there was a book published by, it was called The Endless Step by Esther Herzog, and it's a wonderful book. It's about a Polish girl who is sent to Siberia, but it's a very different book. So I would say this is the first about a Baltic experience for young adult. But there are three books. There was a book written by an Australian called Sentence Siberia. There was a book written by a woman in the 70s. It's called Leave Your Tears in Moscow. It's by Barbara Armonis and discusses a Lithuanian who's deported to Siberia. And then there was the only book that I really had for research, which was a book about a woman who was deported to the Arctic when she was 15 years old, and she buried her story in a jar. And this was a Lithuanian book, but it was translated into English and sold in Chicago by a small Chicago press. And the woman's name was Dalia Grinkevičiūtė, and it's called A Stolen Homeland, A Stolen Youth. And I relied heavily on that book. And even to the point of, you know, the character burying the story in a jar was a real experience of this woman, Dalia.
That's fascinating. Wow. I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about the story of your visit to relatives and asking about your grandfather and how that helped propel you into this story.
Yes. In 2005, I decided that I wanted to take a trip to Lithuania. I had been working in the music business, and I worked in the music business for 22 years. And working in the music business, I was helping musicians tell their stories through music. And they called me the story lady, because I was always saying, what's the story here? What's your story? What's your story? And one day, one of these musicians said to me, Sepetys, what's your story? And I stopped, and I thought, what's my story? And the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I'm Lithuanian. And the guy said, oh, I'm sorry, how long have you had that? And I said, no. I said, no, it's not an illness, it's a country. And he had no clue. He said, I've never seen it on a map. And it really got me thinking, what does that mean, I'm Lithuanian? And so that year, I took a trip to Lithuania with my brother, and I met my grandfather's extended family, and they greeted us so warmly and had a big gathering. And because my father fled from Lithuania as a four-year-old boy and lived in refugee camps for 9 years, we don't have many photos of my dad as a child. So I asked these relatives, do you have any pictures of my father? I want to see pictures of my dad as a kid. And the room got very quiet, and they told me that they had burned all the pictures of my family. And then they said, you don't know, do you? And, you know, when someone says, you don't know, you have that sinking feeling like, I don't know what. And they explained that when my grandfather and father escaped, that they knew the Soviets would come looking for them. And they didn't want to have any proof that they were associated with my family. And I still didn't understand. I said, why? And they said, because your grandfather was a high-ranking Lithuanian military officer. And they would think for sure that we had been involved with his escape. And, you know, they would deport us to Siberia. And I foolishly said, oh, well, you know, thank goodness that didn't happen. And then it was quiet again. And they said, well, we're sorry to tell you that it did. And I not only, you know, was not familiar with this part of history, I didn't know it had affected my you know, own family. And then I had to go home to Tennessee and sit down with my father, who's in his late 70s, and tell him that our freedom had cost his family theirs.
Wow.
Awful, awful day.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's when I really thought, this happened to my own family and I don't know about it. The world doesn't know this story. History holds secrets, and I'm a secret spiller, and I wanted to write the book.
I just wanted to ask what you're hoping people will get out of your book in this community, in as part of the reads, and then what you're working on next.
In terms of what people will get out of the book, I like books that raise questions but don't necessarily push a specific answer. Because reading is a creative partnership, I think. You know, in a movie or film, they show us an image of the character, they show us the setting. But with a book, in this case, I'm providing the text, but the readers in this community, they're creating the characters. They're moving the faders on the emotional tension. So we're creating this together. So I wouldn't want to say this book is about, you know, X, Y, and Z. And it's interesting, as an author, you write a book and you think you know what your book is about. But then you go on tour and you have discussions with communities and they tell you what your book is about. And what's interesting is the book is now published in 40 countries and 46 countries and 30 languages. And in every country, it's interpreted very differently. In the United States, the curriculum around the book is courage and survival. It's required reading in 20 states, and the curriculum is courage and survival. So I went to France, and I told my French publisher, this is a book about courage and survival. And they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, no, it's not. They said, this is a book about identity. How much can be taken away from a human being before we lose our identity? Is it possible to lose our identity? And they said, Ruta, in France, we're very, very concerned with our identity. And I realized, okay, in the U.S., we're studying courage and survival. In France, it's identity. I went to Spain. They're using it to study patriotism. In Japan, where they have a difficult history with war brutality, they're using it to study compassionate courage. And in every country, they're studying something different. So what I've learned and what I've the message would be is that it is up for the reader to determine the value, not for the author to explain it. And I think the reader is always right. And I have some people who like the book, some people really don't like the book, and they're both right, you know. So I want them to read it. I want them to know what happened to these three Baltic countries, how three small countries can teach the world a large lesson of hope and courage and identity and patriotism. But beyond that, I want it to be their experience. And what I'm working on next, my publisher says, oh, you absolutely positively cannot talk about your next book. So here's what it's about. My second book, which has been out already a year, is set in New Orleans in the French Quarter in 1950, about a girl who's trying to build an identity for herself. It's also historical fiction, and it's called Out of the Easy. And the book I'm working on now is set at the end of World War II and exposes one of the biggest war secrets, I think, that we don't know about. There was a ship at the end of World War II that was carrying over 10,000 passengers. Keep in mind the Titanic had about 1,500. This was carrying 10,000 passengers, and it was torpedoed and sunk by the Soviets. And the Nazis have effectively hidden it, for they hid it from the world. It's the largest maritime disaster in history, and people don't know about the ship that sank. And many of the passengers on board were teenagers. And so I'm writing about that ship sinking now. So it's my next book.
So I've got to ask you, the title Between Shades of Gray is very similar to another title that's very popular right now. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the other shade of gray, yes. I mean, Lithuania has never looked so sexy. You can imagine that there's been a lot of confusion and people coming to my book events thinking that I wrote 50 Shades of Gray. And those are always the most fun because as soon as the word Stalin comes out of my mouth, you see their brow sort of furrow and then they grab their iPhone and they look and they're like, what? And then the inevitable shoulder sag of, oh man, do I have to sit here? But no, honestly, it's been a really happy accident because people have picked up the book and then just, you know, said, oh, well, I'm going to read it anyway. And they've emailed me and said, you know, this was not at all the book I intended to read, but I'm glad I did. And I think that's great. And so in a way, I'm fortunate that
that is great.
Yeah. But I think people sometimes, you know, open it expecting a spanking and are a little bit disappointed.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
To learn more about author Ruta Zepetys, visit rutazepetys.com. Music for this episode was Rondo and Minuet by Doc Rossi, which you can find in the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnatune. AADL Talks to Ruta Zepetys is a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.